All right. Happy Thursday on the Ira Kaufman Podcast. The Sage of Tampa Bay Sports is in the house. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com here with Lee DeKemper. We're actually recording here at Hooters of Port Richey, which is always fun, our home away from home. And Ira, you don't spend enough time here, but although your picture is on the wall for some reason with a bunch of women hanging
right
over
in the middle.
You.
They got all these pictures of calendar girls, and then you look up, and then there's the Sage. Something doesn't belong in that picture.
Definitely not. Of course, Ira.
I am Mr. August, however. Continue.
Of course, Ira, your podcast is presented by Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon at Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa. Ira, they're rolling out the red carpet in 2018, or right now during their 2018 red carpet sales event. Lease a 2018 ATS sedan for a new low payment, just $279 a month, zero down, or get 0% financing 60 months and up to $19,000 off all remaining 2017s. Kick off your new year in a new Cadillac from Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, or visit edmorriscadillactampa.com. See the dealer for all those great details, Ira. And at Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon, you know the place, Ira, right there, Causeway Boulevard. Now you can save on a luxurious Cadillac and get more peace of mind at Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon with their like-new certified pre-owned Cadillacs. All certified pre-owned Cadillacs are inspected, reconditioned, and warrantied. Right now, get special financing and pay thousands less than new car prices. I know you like that, Ira. Thousands less than new car prices at Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. Visit edmorriscadillacbrandon.com. And Sage, a little more business to take care of. We love all the people listening to you on iTunes.
Hold on. Let's take care of business here. Every time you pull off another podcast, Isbitz, the price, the monthly stipend goes down at these Ed Morris Cadillac dealers. What's going on? It was $379. Now it's $329. Now, today it's $279. Well, what's going to be next week?
Zero Steven? Down. $279, zero down. How
you know, when
that?
I get to Minneapolis, I'm leaving in 2 weeks for the Super Bowl, and I'm a man on a mission. Of course, you know what my mission is, get number 47 a bus
food.
To Tampa.
Free
Never
food,
mind yeah. that. If that's part of the deal, so much for the better. But, you know, I'm determined to get Lynch a bus in Canton. And while I'm out there, I'm going to spread the word about Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. You never know who's listening, Steven.
No, people come to Florida all the time. You'd be surprised how many people leave our area with a brand new Cadillac. I was saying, Ira, iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, this is where people love to listen to you. You can subscribe. That just means you get a free alert when the podcast posts. And, of course, leave a comment. A lot of nice ones on Podbean coming in. And iTunes, we appreciate any feedback, good or bad.
We go year-round on this thing, Steven. We do not miss weeks.
Every Tuesday and Thursday, there's a brand new episode. I also wanted to let you guys know, I just got an email, the 13th event on the Todd Wright Tour, Saturday before the Super Bowl. Sorry, folks, it's sold out. It's sold out now, right here on January 17th as
bravo,
we record this.
Bravo, Todd.
Todd's tour continues, and I must say, because I think it's funny, because we all know how Todd manages to always have beautiful women around him, at the Todd Wright Tour, Ira, you remember during the fantasy draft, Lee was there too.
Stop right there. I know exactly what you're going to say. And the answer is, yes, I do remember.
Your Hooters waitress there, Brooke.
Yes.
Now, she was in the calendar. She's going to be at Todd Wright's tour event on Saturday.
What day is this tour event?
February 2nd, but it's sold out.
Oh, I'm going to be in Minneapolis. This Bitsy would have made a spot for me.
But
I'm going to be in Minneapolis. Keep hitting
up joebucksfan.com/golf because there's always new events posting. I think Todd's next event's coming in.
Can he change the date? Is it
in
too
April?
Late for him
no,
to change the
that's
date?
That's it.
Steve.
West Chase, it's done.
All right.
Let's see, Ira. Other little pieces of news. Your latest column is out. And, you know, I was going to hit on some other topics, but I just want to hit that first before we forget. You obviously are a Peyton Barber fan. And I know a lot of people think he's just a third or fourth string running back and a solid one, but you seem to have a different opinion, so lay it out there.
Well, I buttress it, Mr. DeKemper, with a couple of solid quotes from the guys that do the job up front blocking for Messrs. Barber, Martin, Sims, Rogers, most notably Donovan Smith and Ali Marpet, are Peyton Barber fans. They're absolute Peyton Barber fans, and the message from both of them, and I think they speak for the entire offensive line, Lee, is the guy gives you everything that he's got. He gets everything that's out there. He leans forward. He falls forward. He doesn't fool around at the line of scrimmage. He's a straight-ahead runner. I compare him, and I called him. I said, if he's a clone of Ernest Graham, that's not the worst thing in the world. Now, having said all that, Lee, I'll top it off by saying this. They're not set at running back. They need a little more work, but Peyton Barber is going to be part of the mix in 2018. Doug Martin's gone. We don't know about Charles Sims. You're going to give up your Buck scholarship card if Sims is back.
Anti-Sims.
And I don't think he's a bad third back, but, you know, that remains to be seen. I think Cutter likes him. So don't be so quick to dismiss Charles Sims. We'll see. I believe his contract is up, Lee. But my point is, Peyton Barber showed enough to me in the final five games, and God knows why it took until the last five games to give Peyton Barber the rock. God only knows.
I agree.
God only knows.
That's what I was going to say. I have a favorite saying, what Jameis wants, Jameis gets. It's not entirely accurate, but what Cutter wants, Cutter gets.
He got 330 yards on an average of 16 carries a game for the last 5 weeks, and he was mighty effective.
I was saying that about Cutter when in relation to Doug Martin sarcastically. Peyton Barber did this the last five games of the year, correct?
Yeah. That's correct.
Started at Green Bay. What also happened in Green Bay? That's when injuries befell the offensive line. And Bucks ended the season with three starters on the offensive line.
Running the ball better than they had all season.
Thank you very much. And they won a game behind that. They played their best ball offensively behind that a beat-up offensive line. I know that's very popular. I see it every day on Twitter. Oh, the offensive line's horrible. Number one, that just proves, I mean, most NFL offensive lines use three starters. That's a jailbreak, you know. The Bucs obviously weathered that storm very well, number one. Number two, I'll go ahead and say this, you know, I was at East-West Shrine practices this week, and I get the chances to BS with Bucs coaches. You know, nothing is on the record, of course, but one Bucs coach, we were talking about issues with the team, and they do not deny there are issues with the team. None of the coaches are even trying to dodge anything, to their credit. They're not trying to dodge anything. They're matter of fact about it. But one time I brought up the offensive line to one of the coaches, he told me, he goes, of all the problems this team has, that's way down the list.
Steve, the one thing we can say about the 2017 Buck run a game, unless you beg to differ, and you usually do, but even this one, Steve, you can write down everything you want with that big pen of yours and come up with a flare pen and take other notes. But, Steve, even the great Isbits, Lee,
uh-oh,
cannot disagree with this following statement. The only thing we can say for sure,
that's a hell of a build-up,
about the 2017 Buck running game, Doug Martin had nothing. He had no burst. You know, he had no vision. You want to argue with that, Steve? You can write anything down in that regard. Doug Martin had nothing.
What do you think of this, Ira?
Any problems with that statement?
No, of course not. Come on. I had no problems with that statement in September.
Ira, I threw this at one. Actually, the same coach I was talking to made the offensive line comment. We were talking about what was wrong, what needed to be fixed, things like that.
I hope you had an hour and a half to discuss this.
20 minutes.
This is not a five-minute conversation. But, what was wrong with the 2017?
Oh, yeah. I got to talking about the offense. And I told him, I said, you know what may have been the biggest problem with the Bucs? This may have been the defining reason why the Bucs stunk this year. Yeah, defensive end stunk out loud. Yeah, Vernon Hargraves vanished. Who knows what happened to him? But because there was no running, what does every defensive coach want to do? What's every defensive coach's
make
goal?
Make you one-dimensional.
Well, I told this coach this, that very question, and his response was, stop the running game. I said, you're walking into my trap. I said, make it one-dimensional. I said, the fact they had no running game, and for reasons that historians will ask 5,000 years from now, why did Dirk Cutter keep starting Doug Martin?
I compared it to Stonehenge. It's the great mysteries of the world.
Oh, there we go. We're
sitting
down.
The great pyramids, mystery, you know, of Egypt, and it's right up there.
You can make argument the fact that Doug Martin couldn't run and the running game was so bad that made the offense completely one-dimensional. That crucified this team. It may have cost them three or four wins.
That's why you got to put Jameis's Winston season in a little bit of an asterisk.
Incomplete, yeah.
A little bit.
Well, then you have to put the coach's season, I mean, do you give that an asterisk? No, because...
Well, that leads us right into our next topic, Steven.
Yeah,
you mentioned the coaching staff.
Exactly. You know, the Peyton Barber thing is interesting. I know a lot of fans don't see him as...
I say you got to get another back, but I think Barber very much has to be part of the 2018 campaign.
He's not going anywhere, and I would bet if anybody wants to take the bet, I'll bet $100 now that Charles Sims is back on this team next year.
I agree, because Cutter likes him.
Cutter likes him. He can pass block. He actually ran the ball better this past year. And, hey, if we're going status quo, or as status woe, as we like to call it,
that.
Why not bring him back, right? He knows the offense is all good with it.
You're not going to overutilize the guy.
No.
He's a, you know, spot player.
I mean, Jaquizz Rodgers will be back. You got Barber, and then we assume they'll draft a running back or get one in free agency. Who knows with this team?
I think the accent should be on a speed guy, Lee, a speedy guy.
Well, everything I hear from scout, and I'm not talking Bucks, I'm talking in general, scouts, coaches I've talked to, players at the Eastern Shrine game, this Barkley's a real deal. because Barkley's a real deal. Now, whether he gets past the Colts or not, that remains to be seen.
Well,
they need a running back, too.
I came up with a stat in my column that it might have caused his bits to fall off his high chair, and he does sit in the high chair over there. Steve, did you notice?
And he throws gruel at you, right?
With my diaper, like Marv Albert.
Right? Steve. We'll take a pot shot. Marv's my boy from Brooklyn.
He sits on a high chair and he throws gruel at you,
gruel,
right?
Yeah. Steve, you noticed my number. It's a little stunning. For whatever reason, I don't think injuries were part of it.
Chair.
8 out of 13 games, the guy had less than 90 yards rushing. 8 out of 13. Barry Sanders, he is not. Steve, is that a fair thing? Barry Sanders, he is not. Let's not go crazy here. 8 out of 13 games? Where is he?
I can't just go look at a stat sheet and say that. I mean, how much did they hand them the ball in those games? You can't. It's not really fair.
Well, if the guy's a dynamite player to that super degree, you hand him the ball.
I understand that Barkley's not the greatest college football player in history, but I don't know. I can't make the big generality. Do the Bucs need a running back, a good one? Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they do.
And any young back should have fresh legs and have enough speed. Look at Ira here. He's got a salad.
He's got a salad? I got no fork.
He's got
over
no
here.
Fork.
What do I think? I'm a primitive over here? What the heck's going on here, DeCamper?
The man's in absolute panic
Even
mode.
Even in Brooklyn, we use a fork over there.
If you could only see his face, people.
I could not respond because I didn't want to pull Peter King and eat with my mouth open.
I don't feel Peter King. What else you got? What do you got for us, Steven?
All right,
Now, when I said coaching staff, your eyes went up like pinballs.
Yeah, coaching staff. Now, when we finished recording the last podcast, news broke that the Buccaneers have picked up a third-year option or an option on all of their assistant coaches. They're all coming back for 2018, and here we are. It's 3 days later. They're still all coming back. No sign whatsoever that's going to change. Lee talked to some people. No signs that anything is going to change. So here we are. What do you make of that, Ira? It's unbelievable, unfathomable, in my opinion. What do you think?
Glazers, where are you, Glazers? Where are you? You got to lay the law down to some of these people. Steve, I understand very well the loyalty of a head coach towards his staff. I understand that. It's part of the reason that Tennessee made a coaching change. The guy didn't want to change a couple of guys. John Robinson insisted, and when it didn't happen, the guy's out on the street looking for a job. It happens. Here we got the opposite. Buck fans are screaming for a couple of changes, token or what, or whatever. Just make some changes. And here's what it comes down to for me, Steve. Tell me where I'm misrepresenting this thing. You got a coach who says this is the best talent I've had in my three-year tenure with the Bucs, including 1 year as the offensive coordinator. Best talent, I've had, and you went from 9-7 to 5-11. What's that say about the job the coaching staff did, Steve? Is this all about Jameis Winston's little right shoulder? You're going to pin the whole 5-11 season on? It's a do-over because Winston got hurt. No, Buck fans are smarter than that. They see through it. They want some changes. They want a reason to believe 2018 is going to be different. There's going to be new players. We know that. But they want more than that. They don't think this coaching staff did a very good job.
To me, it's disingenuous, right? Because you want to believe that your team is doing everything it can to win. You know we're going to hear that line from management. We've heard it before. So if you don't change one coach, you're basically telling the fans and essentially, mind you, they were picking up an option on these guys, right? So they had an easy out. You're telling the fans and everybody associated with the team, these are the best coaches available. Not just we like our coaches. These are the best coaches available because we could have changed a coach. We were in that mode, and we were assessing. And we all know that's a BS.
And plus, look at the guys that have been cut free in the last couple of weeks, Lee, around the league.
Well, I'll just see the last few days. You bring up Malarkey, who won a road playoff game, number one.
Don't remind me of that game.
Mr. Chiefs, I know. I'm not trying to start up ugly memories. And then just today, recording this on Wednesday, the Steelers waved bye-bye to Todd Haley. One of the top offenses, for those who don't know Todd Haley, offensive coordinator of the Steelers, that was one of the top offenses of the game. Put up, 45 points on one of the best defenses in the league? You're not good enough. Goodbye. We can do better. Now, Steve brings up the fact that essentially Cutter and Light are saying, these are the best coaches we can find. Would make Bucs fans more nauseous than that is, these guys have evals that they have to sit down with Cutter. And it, just like you would at your work, at your job, you have an eval, annual eval. And apparently they passed the eval.
You know, Steve, that's a good point, Lee. Steve, something's got to give here.
No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
Nothing's given at all.
But, Steve, here's what I mean. Can't you at least acknowledge some kind of a combination of lack of personnel in some areas, specifically defensive line, lack of personnel, and poor coaching in some areas.
I'll give you a good example.
Meanwhile, we have an acknowledgement of neither. Everybody's coming back.
Well, I'll give you an example. I think it's a real issue that in 2 years, they haven't proven they can develop a young corner, they being the defensive staff. Now, Mark Duffner is doing a hell of a job with linebackers. Linebackers are fantastic. I mean, they got linebackers that are backups that can be starting for other teams. It's either Duffner or Mike Smith's history with linebackers that dates back to Ray Lewis and Ravens. But they know what they're doing with linebackers. Everything else, I mean, I'm confused, to be polite.
Well, here's the money question for you, Ira. The money question, because that's what we ask on this damn podcast, is the money questions. So, Sage, here's the deal. Did the Glazers...
Can I answer in rubles? Is the money question?
Whatever you want.
All right.
Did the Glazers basically go to Dirk Cutter and say, Dirk, we're giving you another year. It's your team. It's your ass.
Do with it what you
do
want.
Do with what you want. And then Cutter decided, you know what? Mike Smith, I love you. You're my buddy. Let's keep the band together here. We believe in what we're doing. And
give
let's
it
stick
our
with
best
it.
Shot.
Or did the Glazers go to Cutter and say, you're coming back, but we're not spending any more money on your coach. We want to see what you can do with your staff that you picked until we believe a little more in you, and we'll go address it next year.
I think the first one has veracity to it, Lee, in terms of take your best shot, Dirk. Mm-hmm. Do what you think's right. If you think this coaching staff should remain intact, do it. I don't want to say this is a setup for failure. I'm not going to go that far.
I know where you're going.
Because I don't know that the 2018 Bucks won't go 10-6. I don't know that. But I will say this. It appears to be everything is set up that this is the make-or-break year for Cutter and, by the way, Jason Light. Both of them together, tandem. Mm-hmm. Neither one is separate from the other. This is the critical year. They got to see progress, and they got to see a lot of it.
Well, obviously, you have pulse of the Bucks like no one else. You really think it's, let's say Cutter goes 8-8, Light's gone? Because Light's been damn good at the draft.
Well,
darn good at the draft.
I'll say this. By that point, he won't have a much better record, if any better, than Mark Domenech in his 5 years. And we saw what happened to Domenech.
Record, true. But production as far as getting talent.
Well, who's responsible then? I mean, that'll be 3 years of Cutter. Mm-hmm. And if you're telling me that the talent is outstanding, you know, how bad a job are you saying Cutter's doing? I mean, at that point, I don't think Cutter can survive another coaching change at this point. I really don't.
You mean Light?
Light, yeah. I don't think Light could survive another coaching
change. I don't think so either. The whole thing's fascinating because the question is who's running the team, right? So in Lee's hypothetical, if the team goes 8-8, could Light go up to Cutter and say, look, you went 8-8, we had some deficiencies, you got to fire the whole defensive staff. Does Light have that kind of power?
At 8-8, I think the Glazers are looking at Jason Light hard. I mean hard. Well, 5 years. It's a long time.
There's a big difference, Ira. Maybe you can speak to it. I mean, everybody knows it, but there's a big difference between picking good players in the draft and building a ball club. And I don't know if Light's done a very good job building a ball club. One thing that I saw today, and I think that this goes to who's evaluating these guys, including the position coaches. So last year, I thought it was kind of neat, Sage. Last year, the Bucks had Bradley McDougal, right? Safety, started every game. 16 games, he was a rising star of the Lovey.
A couple years ago, somebody compared him to a budding John Lynch.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah.
He was a rising star of the Lovey regime. He started 16 games last year, had 3 picks. He was out there starting when the team was doing well and when they were played well in the second half, and he wanted starters' money. Jason Light didn't want to give it to him. So McDougal played the market. He didn't find starters' money, but Pete Carroll and the Seahawks signed him, $1.8 million.
Then Light drafts Justin Evans.
$2 million, yeah. Light drafts Evans, right? Well, McDougal plays in every game for the Seahawks. He starts 9 games with some of the injuries they had. And I'm reading today on ESPN as well as in one of the Seattle papers that both of them named McDougal the best offseason signing by the Seahawks, and he should be priority one.
Wow.
Of the returning
Boy, doesn't that
guys.
Go to Lee's point?
So,
doesn't that go to Lee's point about developing a young defensive
right.
back?
So somebody is deciding that this guy wasn't worth developing and paying with knowledge in the system and 3 picks or it's just odd.
That's as bad as the Mark Barron fiasco, where you couldn't come up with a scheme to take care of to capitalize on Mark Barron's qualities, his assets.
Here's another one for you, DJ Swearinger. Wasn't good enough for Lovey. Well, I think he starts with the Redskins, is it not?
Meanwhile, the Bucks are looking for defensive backs left and right.
It's
turning
odd.
Over rocks.
It's odd when you consider McDougal was young, and that
I didn't think he was developing as a Buccaneer. I mean, I've said it on the podcast.
Well, nobody can fault Jason Light for wanting to get better, right? Okay, I think we could do better. We get that. But what did you do? You went out and you signed J.J. Wilcox in free agency, and then you traded him because you could get T.J. Ward, who turned out to be an accused felon and didn't want to... Didn't want to tackle and didn't want to
and
be here.
And not great in the locker.
Yeah, so
well, and I can
you,
add to that. I
you
can
screwed
add,
up.
I can add another layer to that. Because you made all these changes at safety, you had to draft one in the second round when you could have got Alvin Kamara, Hunt, and there goes your run game.
And Lee had written many times that safety wasn't really a problem on this team. Was very low down on the priorities, but then they drafted Justin Evans.
Now Tandy regressed last year.
He didn't play. The guy closes the year with four interceptions.
How could he not play with that kind of December the year before?
I know. Very odd. But what are they doing? He's young, too, in the scope of he's not old. You know, so
20s.
Or this season, what he came into this season, I think 27 years old. Mm-hmm. So it's odd. It's interesting. It's the Bucs. It's the soap opera. Jason Light and team building, you know. They got to win this year. Something.
Hold on. I'm not finished with the coaching staff over here.
Please, please.
Let's mention a couple other positions. Just a couple. Let's start with the big one. Did Jameis Winston take another step up? Now, granted, he was hurt. Before he was hurt, was Jameis Winston playing at a stud level, at a franchise quarterback level? No,
well, from what we're hearing, before he got hurt was the first two games.
Well,
okay.
Okay.
He was laying okay. Not bad, but okay. The Bears
fact,
game.
The fact remains that Jameis Winston.
Actually, the second game we keep hearing from people we trust that Jameis Winston was hurt at Minnesota. You've heard that, right?
The fact is Jameis Winston went 3-10 this year as a starter. He went 3-10. Those are the facts. Finished with a flourish, and I was glad he did because I certainly haven't given up on Jameis Winston. Far from it. Unlike some Buck fans who I think are showing absolutely no patience or whatever.
None.
Now, let's flip to the offensive line. Lee, can we really focus in on one single offensive line starter that has taken a big step up? That took a big step up in 2017.
Big step, no. Marginal, yes. Big
Smith,
step, no.
Smith stayed about the same.
Yeah, marginal.
Panfield might have went backwards.
Panfield, I think, went backwards.
Marpet, even maybe because of the switch, didn't distinguish himself.
I think that's part of it.
Dotson might have been their best offensive line.
Got hurt.
He's not young. Got hurt. And Sweezy was a bit disappointing. So,
he's
Steve,
okay.
Everywhere you look, except maybe linebacker and maybe wide receiver, although I think that's a maybe with DeSean Jackson.
Well, Godwin.
Steve, they didn't maximize their skill level. I think you can make that argument.
Yeah, Benenock's coming along a little bit, but there's no standout superstar coach. The thing that disturbs me most is with Jameis because, again, I'm not anti. I know Lee's a little down on him. I'm not anti-Mike Bajakian at all. Obviously, Jameis has come along and done a lot of good things, but we keep getting told or we keep hearing that Jameis has this amazing football IQ, that he's a fast learner, that he's mature beyond his years. Isn't he the kind of guy who would benefit from just a pure change at quarterback's coach, a new set of eyes? Maybe a guy who played in the league for 10 years. Maybe a guy like Mike Shula, not that he would come back.
I like that guy, Alex Van Pelt. He's already been gobbled up.
That's the name I was going to throw, Alex Van Pelt.
He's already been gobbled up.
Yeah, who's been here before, right?
Van Pelt. I thought he did a great job with Josh Freeman.
With Josh Freeman, definitely a great job. But so there are guys out there that might have been better, just at least from a fresh set of eyes standpoint, and they didn't even interview anybody. I mean, if you're not going to interview anybody, that's pretty bold and brazen.
I tell you what, Steve, at this point, depending on what happens this offseason, it's going to be hard to market this team. It's going to be hard to generate a lot of interest for ticket sales.
And that'll roll us into our next topic, Iris. So here we are, right? We are less than 2 months from the free agency dinner bell ringing. So we know that every fan everywhere for every NFL team gets all fired up for free agency because it's a season of
Except
hope.
For the Packers.
Except for the Packers, but they, you know what?
New GM. Tuesday's going
to
play.
They got rid of their guy.
Buck fans think every free agent wants to come to Tampa. Everybody wants to play in Tampa.
Right. So here we are. Is Light going to get an open checkbook from the Glazers to start writing checks to get some excitement in here? What do you think?
I don't think that's going to happen, Lee.
Whoa, really?
I don't think it's going to happen. Doesn't mean they're going to go with the cheap route. They want value. That's going to be the key word. Give me some value. And
value over production.
Look, if they were going to open the pocketbooks open far and wide, they would have got Calais Campbell last year. They would have matched Jacksonville and got Calais Campbell. And that's coming off a 9-7 season. Maybe Calais Campbell, the theory is he puts you over the top. Mm-hmm. Now, with this free agent market, and you've looked at the defensive alignment, it's weak. Real weak.
I don't doubt anything you're saying.
Nobody's going to come in. Nobody's commanded an exorbitant amount of money out of that defensive line.
You look at the Bucs' defensive line, you look at weaker.
Well, you're going to get improvements. You can get upgrades.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But, well, you're talking defensive end. There's just in our division, star Lotulelei is out there. First-round pick, good player for the Panthers. And Dontari Poe only signed a one-year deal with Atlanta, and he was a difference maker.
These guys are negligible pass rushers, Steve. They're negligible. The Lutelli is better than Poe.
They're negligible pass rushers, but they're massive upgrades to the players we have.
Exactly.
I don't know Poe is a massive upgrade on
Swaggy
Clint McDonald.
He's an upgrade over Swaggy.
McDonald. I don't know.
He's an upgrade over Swaggy.
Well, Baker's not going to beat it.
I know. That's what I'm talking about. There's going to be a hole there. Yeah. And, you know, you paid Swaggy how much money?
It pains me to say this, but you can't really argue. Light's track record in free agency?
Not good.
Would you give him an open checkbook? Lee, would you give him an open checkbook? It's your money. Open checkbook. Knowing that you're going to have to pay Jameis, Mike Evans, Kwan.
Well, if you don't, you're pretty much guaranteeing with this coaching staff. Pretty much guaranteeing you're going to lose again.
Hey, job one's getting Brent Grimes back.
Well, you can't give him a totally open paycheck, but if you're playing scared with your GM, then what's he doing here?
Thank you.
So
thank you.
You got to do something.
Now, Steve brought this point up. I got to go off on this. I'm sorry. Steve, keep me up here. Because Tom Coughlin had wanted to come back to Jacksonville for a long time. Obviously, he wanted to stay in New York, but barring New York, he loves Jacksonville. He's got a home. It's almost like a second home to him. And he wanted to stay in football, but obviously 70 years old. That's kind of – so they have success there at Jacksonville. Who did he draft? What's his face? Starts with F, last name. I come and say not Faroe, but French name.
Fournette.
How could I forget that? Anyway, he drafts Fournette. Who else did he draft? Everybody else in that team, Caldwell drafted. Coughlin didn't draft that. All of a sudden, you got a bunch of Bucks fans. Not a lot of them, but a bunch of them. Like, damn it, we need a president of football operations. Why? Well, because Light's not getting the job done. Well, if you don't trust Light, what the hell is he working for? Get rid of him. Why add on another layer for $1 million
a year? The Jags had been building for years.
Steelers, yes. The Steelers have never had a president. The Packers have never had the president like overseas corporate stuff, yes. But all these good teams I could rattle off that are every year they're in the playoffs, they don't have a president. And then, you know, you and I will get going about this. You know, some guy, I saw him on Twitter today. Well, the Bucks need Derek Brooks. What? What in his resume suggests he can run an NFL team?
I want him in the building, DeKemper. I want him in the building.
Okay, we'll give him a clipboard and he can go scout the East-West Shrine game.
I want him in the building. I think he knows what a free agent can do. He'll check on a guy's character, which...
Boy, that's difficult to do.
It is proven difficult. It has proven difficult for this administration.
Well, it's not so much character. Swaggy Baker's an outlier. They usually get decent guys.
I still go back to Anthony Collins. What a bum.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
What a bum.
Well, to me, when you talk about Light, there's BL and AL. Before Lovey and after Lovey.
Before Lovey and after Lovey.
So to me, even though Light was already on board, to me, Light's administration started when they told Lovey to clean out his desk in the middle of the night.
I can't get over that Anthony Collins, guys. I just can't. He's out of football. Nobody wants him.
Nobody wants him, right?
Nobody wants him.
Except the Pro Football Focus crowd.
Cash his check. He's done. I respect that. So, we hear that all the time. Team president, Dungy, is he interested? Brooks, can he oversee?
Dungy would hire.
You could go and pick guys out there. If you don't trust the GM, he should know what he's doing. But you know what? We haven't seen any changes yet.
Now, wait a minute. You just gave me a big speech about another set of eyes is helpful. I can say that in terms of player evaluation.
Oh, yeah.
Set of eyes.
Absolutely. I'd bring in all kinds of sets of eyes. I was just going to say we haven't seen any additions, changes to Jason Light's staff either. So it looks like the same guys are going to be picking free agents. I just wanted to note Tom Coughlin, they had an excellent draft beyond that. They got the big left tackle, Cam Robinson, has been a monster. And
free agent, right, Cam Robinson?
No, they drafted him.
Okay, I was thinking the old Rams Cam Robinson.
No. Okay. Drafted him, and D.D. Westbrook has played very well in the playoffs. Too,
behaved to his credit. Yeah. He was a knucklehead off the field. I'm going to make Ira warm and fuzzy here. I'm going to make you warm and fuzzy.
All right.
Don't touch him.
You know, you and I go round and round about Father Dungy.
Don't mention Tom Coren. Don't throw that in there. Don't throw that at me in this podcast.
I like Tom Coren.
He's a good man. All right. He's a good man.
But, you know, you and I go round and round about Dungy.
Yes, you call him Father Dungy.
Yes. Because people expect him to be a priest or something.
I'm going
to
have breakfast with the man later this week.
Well, I hope he picks up your grits and eggs.
Do you want me to address him as Father Dungy?
Yeah, please do. He might give you a blessing. You can always use that.
Continue.
Forgive
me, Father, I have sinned.
Exactly, act of contrition. Dungy, as much as I said and have debated that he doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame as a coach, his ability to pick assistants is absolutely uncanny. And for that reason alone, you know what? If the Glazers decided we're going to throw away $1 million and we'll put a layer on top of Light and hire somebody, I would say
he's got a heck of a coaching tree. Heck of a coaching tree.
It's uncanny. His ability to pick assistants.
A lot of future head coaches.
Yeah. I mean, Tomlin, your friend with Russo, picked him right out of college. Baker, or Joe Barry, excuse me. I mean, on and on and on I can go.
Marinelli.
Like I said, we can go on and on. You know, just is uncanny.
Herm Edwards. Herm Edwards.
It's a long, long, long list. And it also further magnifies Dirk Cutter. What is going on with these secondary coaches? Brett Maxey, John Hoke. Come on, we can't do any better. There's not one.
Thank you. Not one
up and coming college guy.
Thank you.
And Lovey's secondary coaches weren't any good either.
Good. Friendly and friends only. Steve just brought college coaches. We get a lot of fans saying, well, you got to keep the coordinator, i.e., Mike Smith, because who's going to come in on a 1-year contract? If I'm wrong, Ira, you would know this because you were there. You were longtime beat writer for the Trib. Wasn't Dungy on a 1-year contract when Herm Edwards left? And was it Lovey that also left at the same time? And he went out and got Tomlin and Barry out of college because any college coach, you get a chance to go in the NFL, you're going to jump with that.
You don't ask twice.
And look at how those guys turned out.
Absolutely.
So when they say, well, who's going to come in on a 1-year contract, you're telling me you can't find a decent young college coach like Steve talked about?
Well, I'll say this. Gil Bird, you remember him? He was Lovey's cornerbacks coach. He went up to Buffalo, and they had that – I forget his name. He's got the funny name, but he had a great rookie year, the cornerback there. Their corners played lights out. So, I mean, he's coaching up there with Leslie Frazier, so we got to give him that. All right, Sage, I'm always there calling you on this stuff, Ira. Always there calling. All right, here we go.
What research, Lee?
Well, it helps to have a laptop.
It's amazing what Esbitz can come up with.
Well, I wanted to double check. I knew it. I Tre'Davious White, I think his name is.
Yeah, he had a very good season.
So, Jason Light was back in the news this week talking to Rick Stroud. They're hugging. I'm just kidding. But anyway, they are talking, and Jason Light is sort of doing a tell-all on the season. And may I say from my own mouth, good golly, the Bucs Media Relations needs to talk to Jason Light about how to not sound like an idiot in front of the fans, because fans don't handle certain types of buzzwords very well, especially after a 5-11 season. So that said, Ira, Jason Light said, quote, that he was cringing at expectations that were put on the team outside of the team. He later clarified, saying that was tied to people thinking the offense was going to come wild out of the chute, you know, coming out, being really hot. Out of the gate, and Jason Light said he seemed to think he knew it was going to take a little more time to gel. What do you make of all that?
Gentlemen, you think Luke from Port Richey wants to read a clarification? You think Javier in Panama wants to hear a clarification? When you start issuing clarifications, that means you misspoke. You misspoke, Lee. I got to tell you guys the truth. I read that story 3 times. I had to read it 3 times in a row before I believed that... what the heck Light was saying?
It's not a smart choice of words.
Convoluted. Of course, heavy on the excuse about Jameis Winston. Very heavy. I saw that coming from a mile away. May I remind him that your backup quarterback was 2-1 and your starter was 3-10. I don't want to hear too much about that injury. It hurt, but they weren't very good before the injury either. This thing, you know what irked me? He clarified it and said he was talking about the offense, and he mentions the fans were thinking 50 points a game. That's stupid. Don't say something stupid like that. That's an insult. First of all, no team in the league averaged 30. I think the Rams led the league. He averaged about 29 points. Nobody's at 50 points. It's stupid. You want to come up with a number, you come up with 30. You don't come up with 50.
To use one of your favorite sayings, I heard you say this on Russo's show today. Chris Russo of Bad Dog Radio.
While he was killing me about Tomlin?
Yeah. Thank you for bringing up Andrew McCutcheon. That's a inside joke there, people. Did Light think he had the 99 Rams or something? No, come on.
People have the right to expect better than a terrible red zone offense and a team that averages 20, 21 points a game. That's not going to cut it because your defense isn't very good. Yeah, you know, if you got the Viking defense and you average 21 points, you're going to win 9 or 10 games. You ain't got the Viking defense. You ain't got the Jacksonville defense. You don't have it. Mm-hmm. So... you're loaded up in the offseason, weapons for Winston. We understood it. We applauded it. Mm-hmm. And it didn't pan out, Lee. For whatever reason, it didn't pan out. And even before Winston got hurt or whatever, he was not accurate on a deep ball of DeSean Jackson. It wasn't accurate.
True. That's true.
It wasn't.
That's true. But yet he was with Godwin.
So, you know, I think him and DeSean have to spend a lot of time in this offseason together and get that timing down. It's not easy.
Well, isn't it just in general? Isn't it just odd for any general manager to say he didn't like high expectations? Yes. That's just odd.
Yes, it's odd, especially when we heard.
I mean,
Steve, we heard all year going into it that nobody has higher expectations, puts higher expectations on this team than the people in this building. We heard that a million times, Steve. So you can't have it both ways.
No, you can't have it both ways. And let's just face it, this is sports, right? It's entertainment. Everybody's supposed to feel like $1 million
Here's
to start
unless
the season.
You're the Miami Marlins.
Yeah, so, I mean, in a salary cap league, come on.
Thank
I
you,
mean,
the salary cap league, which
what
has
are you
a salary
about?
Floor.
Wait, here's another line I heard all during the offseason. Pressure is a privilege. Pressure is a privilege, meaning, hey, people think highly of it. We should embrace that. You know. Now, by the way, that's Tomlin's favorite word, embrace.
Yeah.
We embrace the legacy.
Rod used to say the same
we
thing.
Embrace
They're
this.
Good friends.
Yeah, we embrace. How about embracing, Bucks? How about embracing?
Yeah,
people think you should win 10 games. How about it?
One thing that I thought was fantastically, I can't believe it came out of his mouth in a postseason interview, right? So
his first postseason interview.
His first on the record.
Yeah,
I mean,
first.
He had talked to me in the locker room.
First
after the
on
season.
The record.
I know he
yeah.
talked
we
to you as well.
Well, yeah,
well
you asked him how he likes his coffee over there. But
no, he wasn't too happy with me, but that's fine. I don't care. Anyway, in that story, Ira, he talks about the failed pass rush. So what does he say? He says that Noah Spence, you know, that was a bummer, and we relied
Smith.
On Jacquees Smith. So I read this 3-4 times myself to really try to stomach that all this stuff was said. It's like, dude, these are the guys who did not play, not the people who did play who were on the field. What about the guys that you put on the field representing the Buccaneers? Why are you talking about the guys that didn't show up?
Jacquees
Smith.
One of them who you renegotiated his contract with Golston. You renegotiated.
Yeah.
He played a lot of snaps at left defensive end.
I mean, it's like, come on.
Zero sacks.
You know, it's
zero
bizarre.
Sacks.
It was really bizarre, and of course, you know.
Also, how bad does it make him look that he publicly acknowledges we were counting heavily? It goes right to your point. This has been one of your big rants
uh-oh.
For the last few months.
Which one?
Where he says publicly, we were banking on Jacquees Smith
yeah.
and Noah Spence. He said it.
Yeah, banking on hurt guys.
That's something you've been saying for 3 months. What are they thinking?
Yeah, don't bank on hurt guys. That's what they did the previous
season. And by
the
way, I did a radio influence interview with Beckles. For an hour.
I got to hear this.
And yeah, it was a great interview.
Fantastic.
And you know what? With all his bluster and all his craziness, he's no dummy.
No. He's sharp.
And he makes a lot of good points. And part of that, in somewhere in that hour, we started talking about the defensive line. And you know what Beckel's point is? Who's Noah Spence? He's a nobody. What do you mean you're counting on Noah Spence? He's never done anything. What are you counting on?
Fair point.
Yeah.
I can't get the Jason Light real quick? I got a couple things about the Jason Light comments. First, I had an idea. I'm not saying it was Einstein-esque, but I knew where he was coming from. It wasn't communicated well. It reminded me of when Chucky tried to say, well, we can't get Antonio Bryant and Joey Galloway on the field at the same time because one's an X and one's Y.
Boy,
people
made,
don't want to hear
that.
They say, you coach him up, get him on the field. People don't want to hear that nonsense. Reminded me of Greg Schiano when someone talked about the importance of halftime adjustments. He basically said, we don't do halftime adjustments because you wait that long, you're done. Well, people only heard halftime adjustments, and to this day they mock him for halftime adjustments or none. So I know where Jason was coming from. It wasn't an eloquent saying, but you know, he said that these expectations didn't come from within the building. Is that correct, Steve? I want to make sure I'm paraphrasing correctly.
Yeah, what he said was, I actually pulled it up right here as we were talking. He said that, see the times, he said the whole year, just the expectations were not set by us. It was just something I cringed at.
Yeah, I wonder who us is because, again, we're recording this on Wednesday. Earlier today, Wednesday morning, DeSean Jackson admitted, yeah, we had expectations for a better offense. His big free agent signing had expectations. So who was us?
Steve,
who was us?
And his wife? I don't like revisionist history. None of us do. We don't like it. And that's what came through a lot in those remarks. Revisionist history saying, like, well, we never said we're kind of like, he never said this, but this was the implication. We never said we were going to win 10 games. Well, first of all, if you didn't think that way, Why not?
Yeah, exactly, because you better win 10 games or you're probably not going to get a playoff.
Steve, why didn't you think that?
Now, I'm a big Jason Light fan, but I'm just saying that, you know, whatever he was trying to get across, he did it badly.
Is he trying to basically say they didn't underachieve? Well, is he going that far?
Here's the thing. I appreciate, in my just the broad view of this, I looked at it as Jason Light was trying to be Dirk Cutter. Cutter is naturally candid, and he's just himself and lets it all hang out there, like it or not. Light is much more, and Cutter's not typical in that area, but Light is much more reserved and
diplomatic
and calculated. But here it felt like he was trying to just let it all open up, but there are certain things that it didn't play well, and I'm not surprised by some of the answers. I'm surprised that he actually verbalized them, and as Lee said, they weren't expressed very well.
Give me another line or two from Mr. Light.
Well, I thought it was fascinating that he threw Doug Martin right under the bus. There goes the bus. Doug Martin's right under it. He said that Doug Martin, he says, I quote, I think the lack of or having a hard time getting the run game going was, you know, Doug just didn't have, he just wasn't ever the same. That's the end quote right there. So it's
been the same for a few years.
Exactly. He was the same. He was the same as 2016, so I don't even know what Light's talking about there. Same guy.
And to be fair, Lee, we gotta give his bits his props because we don't get a chance to throw too many compliments his way. He is the one guy among us that was the most adamant. Don't bring Doug Martin back. Bring him back.
Well, I was right there with him.
He said it often.
Lee was right there.
He said it repeatedly.
I was right there with him.
For example, Mark Cook came up to me a month or so ago, and he's like, "Which one of you two guys are going after Doug Martin?" I said, "Well, Steve and I aren't going after Doug Martin. We're stating the obvious, and it's both me and Steve." So we're like,
you guys were very strong on that.
No, we were way ahead of that. I was just more angry about it than Lee, but we were equally writing about it and saying it. I mean,
my point is,
plain as day.
Yeah, Steve would write more angry about it.
My point is a step further. You bring him back.
Who?
Does it? No, I'm saying. You bring him back. You decide to bring him back.
Lee almost had a heart attack.
Take it
right
easy,
there.
Lee.
Hypothetically, I hope you're talking.
Why does it take you?
Oh,
why does it take 17. You 7 weeks to realize you don't have it anymore? 7 weeks?
Seven? No.
11 starts.
Now you're revising history. Doug Martin was actually on the damn field in December when Dirk Cutter was fighting for his job. And he didn't even know if he was coming back, and he's putting the ball in the hands of a guy who completely sucks? Come on. What was he thinking? And I still go back to Jaquizz Damn Rogers got the game ball against the Giants for running so well, and then he was never seen again.
And Barber had a good game against Chicago in the open and was never seen again.
Never seen again.
Until Green Bay, when he was forced to start against a beat-up offensive line, and he got 100 yards.
But to be fair to Jason Light, hey, Dirk Cutter's in charge of who suits up on game day. You know, Jason Light, and they together screwed up on bringing Martin back. But you know what? Once he's on the roster, Jason Light ain't coaching the team. That's on the head coach.
No question about it.
All right, Sage, let me move on to a
look
couple.
Look at you. You got all kinds of topics.
I got a little list here.
It's called an outline.
We got to hit the list. Got a little outline.
It's a long off season, Steve. Save a couple of shekels.
You didn't learn how to build an outline in high school?
Quan Alexander. Bobby Wagner of the Seahawks isn't going to the Pro Bowl. Now Quan Alexander makes his first Pro Bowl. He'll be out there. We'll be talking to him next week. What do you make of that?
I'll tell you what I make of it. I put Quan Alexander on the Pro Bowl, even if he made 11 tackles this year, just for getting in Swaggy Baker's face after the game in Charlotte. How do you like that? Big step up that day when Quan did that.
And then James followed through.
James followed through, but somebody had to talk to him.
I can't give him a damn point for that, Ira.
Well, you know
too
what
late.
I'm saying.
Too late.
You know what I'm saying. Oh, too late. He's a young player. He's got to bide his time in that locker room.
Okay.
He kind of waited for somebody else to do it, and he realized nobody else was going to
do it.
Probably.
But
as far as his on-field play, you know,
let me go back to the coaching real quick.
Yeah.
Because this is just so under my skin, I can't control myself. You know what? He's a young player. You're right. You know what? Every morning he's with Mike Smith watching film. You know what Mike Smith should have done, Quan? I'm telling you this, man to man, just between us, you need to go rip Swaggy a new one and get him kicked off this team for being a lard ass and do it in week 6 here. You know, and Quan would have said, yes, sir, and he would have done it. That's coaching. That's Parcellsian kind of stuff. Go ahead.
Oh, here's one for you, Ira.
I mean,
he
dispatches
exactly,
a killer out
exactly.
there.
Here's one for you, Ira. Here's an employee of the team. I'll just say that. And he pulled me aside after the last game, and he was kind of chewing my ear a little bit about Joe Buck's fan, about –
You ever notice three-quarters of the people DeKemper talks to and says so on a podcast remain unidentified? It's unbelievable.
Lee hangs out in dark alleys and talks to people. So somebody's got to do this.
He keeps confidentiality. He keeps it.
So this guy buttonholes me, and he kind of chews me out, thinking that we're negative on the offensive line when Steve and I are not. Well, anyway, you know, it was an okay conversation. I could tell the guy was agitated. He was professional about it. And we talked for a while, and I said, well, if you want to know, I'll tell you right now. I've been hammering Swaggy Baker. And he kind of shook his head and looked at me. He goes, I don't blame you.
Nope, nobody's defended Baker. I mean, nobody. Nobody. The best Cutter can do is say, well, he's been a little inconsistent. That's Cutter talk for the guy who hasn't had a good season. Yeah, you know, that's the way you do it. So
Quan, Ira, what I think is interesting about Quan.
Quan is the soul of this defense. Heart, I don't think any question.
You know, nobody, look, Bucks fans, they don't vote much in the Pro Bowl. This is not a town that stuffs the ballot box or, you know, hits refresh on their computers.
Like they're not a playoff team. They're not on TV very often.
Carolina, I think 2 years ago, had 9 guys make the Pro Bowl. It was because of their fans. So Quan making it, that, and Gerald McCoy making it as well, the one-third part that's the fan vote, that ain't happening.
That's negligible.
It's coaches and players putting Quan Alexander in, which I think is pretty cool.
No question about it. You know, he's a very big positive going forward, Lee. He's a big, big asset.
Yes.
Works well with Levante, and now they've added Beckwith to the mix. As you've said many times, linebacker's probably the strength of this team.
Probably, that and tight end.
And he sits right in the middle of it. Right in the middle of it.
What do you make of this? This is floated on Twitter. I'll give him credit. Rick Stroud, he had a back and forth with fans the other night on Twitter. And what he said, I do not doubt one bit. Because I've talked to Bucks people enough that basically reinforced what I was told, that the Bucks were looking to get Cook at 19 last year, and because O.J. Howard, you know, everybody and their brother was in love with him. The fact that he slipped, they're like, oh, we got to get Howard. We can't pass this up. But the instant if you read between the lines, it was almost like whoever was telling Stroud this was trying to snowball him, give him a sales job, like, yeah, well, once we got Howard, we decided Doug Martin's our guy. What? After the first round, all of a sudden you just give up on trying to upgrade at the biggest hole in your offense?
We're never going to know that the Bucks were going to take Dalvin Cook at number 19. We're never going to know that. And maybe that's the way it should be. It'll remain an enduring mystery. But the fact remains that Mr. Isbitz and I knew in advance that if Howard was there at 19, they were not going to take Dalvin Cook. They were going to take Howard. We said it on this podcast. And we tried to give Buck fans and our listeners advance notice, Steve. And then we went to that draft party, and we told everybody at the draft party, don't be shocked if Howard is the pick.
Let's clarify. You told everybody at the draft party, work in the room, having a beer, doing shots. We still have video of you doing shots.
And then when they took Howard, they all bowed down like, you're the man, Ira. You're the man.
Ira, there's video of you doing shots, and whatever happened after that, I don't even know.
I am not convinced they would have took Dalvin Cook at number 19.
But what do you make of the insinuation? That's the implication I got. That whoever is telling us to Stroud was like, okay, we got our man in Howard, therefore we're not going to get a running back. That just seems.
It just seems very, very strange. Very strange. And, you know, what makes it worse is guys like Kareem Hunt and Kamara. It's bad.
Remember a couple others who had not really undistinguished years, but better than Doug Martin.
A lot of rookie running backs made big impacts in 2017. And the Bucs stuck with the, quote, status quo. By that,
status
I mean
quo.
Doug Martin. And they suffered the consequences, Steve. Going forward, looking towards the April draft, you like Barkley. I'm not sold that he's Adrian Peterson.
I would
take a running back in rounds 2 or 3. That wouldn't bother me. I think they do need help there. But I don't know. If you come away and you don't come up with some stud defensive linemen, this draft's going to be a failure.
I will say this.
This whole offseason is going to be a failure if you don't come up with some pass rush.
I'm going to do some pimpage because I've been asking around at East West Shrine Game. I got interviewed with Mayock, so I'll do a little pimping here. I don't know if it's going to happen Thursday. Don't know if it's going to happen Friday. But there are two players, Bucks fans, I know these names are on their radar, and they'll want to hear what Mike Mayock has to say. And Mayock, let's just say, is a huge fan of Mr. Barkley. And I talked around to a couple other people, and I've gotten the same impression. There's a name that Mayock dropped in comparison to Barkley. Bucks fans will want to read this article.
Well, we've said it before, and we're not going to go there now, Ira. It's too early, and it's too late in the podcast. But Barkley is a potential job saver. He's a potential job saver, and we talked about this last time. That's going to matter. Now,
who says he's going to be there at 7?
Nobody says he's going to be there at 7.
But nobody thought Howard would be there at 19.
And if we do think, I think if Jason Light believes that he's so great in the draft and he's done well picking talent, well, to me, and I just look at things in a broad logical sense, Ira, if he's so good picking guys and has such a good batting average in the draft, then can we trade down and accumulate picks for a guy who hits well? To me, I'd be happy with that, given who's doing the picking, but it's interesting.
And he's hit multiple needs.
Well, exactly,
process.
Yeah. If you can get 3 more picks and you got a guy who bats pretty well, then that's, you know, interesting. And the whole thing is fascinating with these assistant coaches coming back.
Hey, some Buck fans want to trade McCoy.
I didn't sleep well Monday night knowing all these assistant coaches are coming back. Can we get another, maybe a couple
of them? Well, then you read the Light interview and you slept even worse.
I put in my podcast, Ira. I know you don't listen.
he's not a podcast guy.
Kevin Mawai.
Are you on Google Play like I am?
I'm on Google Play. Kevin Mawai.
What do you mean? He's up for the Hall of Fame, Kevin Mawai. He's battling John Lynch.
He last coached with the Bears, and he's out of coaching now. This is the perfect guy to bring in for a training camp to coach Ali Marpet.
Fantastic center.
He transitioned from right guard to center. It's, you know, and he coached the guy at the Bears, Whitehair, who's their starting center, who came in as a guard, and he transitioned that guy. He knows how to do it. Is this team going to bring him in for an interview and say, Kevin, can we pay you $100,000 for training camp and just sit with Marpet, follow him around? I don't get it.
To me, it's damning when you have some of the elite teams in the NFL that are making significant coaching changes because they want to improve, they want to get better, and you have the Bucks with the defense they had, terrible, and we're all good. We're fine.
And you know what, Ira, and I'm going to say this, and I know he's not the most popular guy, but when we talk about the assistant coaches, we keep hearing about how the old Bucks are embraced around One Buck Palace.
Not anymore.
They're embraced.
Always welcome.
Always welcome, revered. Can we give Warren Sapp $100,000 to hang out in training camp and coach up these guys?
That ain't going to happen.
Well, we tried it with Simeon Rice last summer, and I didn't see a lot of improvement.
Well, you brought something up very, very
interesting. He was there 2 days, Ira. He was there 2 days.
You brought up something very interesting. I made this point in one, maybe two stories recently. And, you know, I've gone on record as saying, there's no way in hell the Bucks can draft a cornerback with this current defensive staff because they've demonstrated they can't develop a young corner. Incomplete grade on Noah Spence, but I think it's fair. You could say they haven't developed a defensive
end.
And I think
that's fair.
And I think that's fair.
That's what it is.
When they brought in Simeon Rice came in and worked out with Noah Spence, and Noah Spence said, I heard stuff from Simeon Rice I've never heard in my life. Like, wait a minute. I know Simeon Rice is smart. I know he was great. But I never knew of him to be an ultimate defensive end coach. I would have said right there and then, if I would have heard that, which they did hear that, I said, Simeon, we'll give you $1.5 million. Stick around for a few months. Or I would have replaced Jay Hayes last week. One of the two.
See, that's one of the great things about Simeon Rice, by the way. Lee makes a fair point here. He was blessed with incredible physical skills, tremendous body.
Yes.
Genius. But he was a student of the game, mm-hmm. Simeon. He studied. He studied the tendencies of these tackles. He knew what their weaknesses were. He studied the tape. So he we saw him put the time in, you know, where everybody else was going in. He's running laps around. Very dedicated player. Mm-hmm. Much more than just
a pro's pro.
Yeah, a real pro's pro.
One other name I'll throw at you who's still out there. He didn't get back into the league in coaching. I forget. I think he was in the league last in 2013.
Yes,
or something.
Michael Clayton's still Titans. Around. Yes, Michael Clayton's still around.
Keith Millard. Now, he was here as a D-line coach. Highly revered by Gerald McCoy.
Very good player.
Sapp loved him.
Developed Michael Bennett. Sapp loved him because he coached Sapp with the Raiders. He's not employed right now. You can't bring this guy in just on a consultant basis as a pass rush coach or something. I mean, there's so many names. That
how do you come up with all this
interview
stuff?
I can't sleep. I can't believe these coaches are back.
Essentially, what the Bucks have done, they've set themselves up for a massive fail next year. Basically, they set the table like...
I don't want to go there, Lee. I don't want to say that.
How else could you say that? How else could you not say that? It's like we're just talking about just right now how, wait a minute, you're content with this awful defense. You're content with that. If it doesn't improve, how can they even? I mean,
Lee, we don't know the offseason influx of talent. We don't know it.
That's very true. But like I said, I would not draft a cornerback if I was light. Yeah. Not with Maxey and
John Hoke.
All I know is jobs are on the line now. Isbitz was trying to give me some nonsense about how 7-9 is going to save Cutter and Light's job.
No. I said they don't have. In my opinion, I don't think they have to make the playoffs to save jobs. I think they have to be back to 9-7, maybe 8-8 with an excuse, like 8-8 with quarterback missing 4 or 5 games or something.
Real quick with this, Bucky Brooks of the NFL Network, I was talking to him out at Shorecrest, St. Pete, where they have the practices.
Hey, actually, name names over there.
Well, because there's a story coming up about this. So I asked him, I said, are people putting too much emphasis on Jameis's injury for the collapse of the season? And he looked at me, he goes, a quarterback with a bum shoulder? Come on. Meaning, yeah, it's a big thing.
Yeah. I'm not saying it was a trifle. I'm not saying it was a trifle. But he lit it up against Buffalo with a bum shoulder.
Yeah,
he did. They didn't lose that game because of Jameis Winston.
No, they did not. He gave him the lead.
All right, Sage. Last quote from Light, which we don't have to dive into. I just thought it was funny. And then I want to hit, because we ended last podcast with you wanting to tell the story.
Oh, we got to make our picks, too.
I want to tee you up for that. Yeah, that's two games. They're not going to take long. All right. one thing Jason Light said, which I thought was hilarious, he's talking about Mike Smith, and he says, but you know, quote, you don't just forget how to coach. Why isn't Lovie Smith still here? He forgot how to coach. I mean, guys forget how to
coach. I don't like that line. I don't like what people say.
Guys forget
that.
How to coach
prove
all the
it.
Time.
No. If you didn't forget it, prove it.
All right, Ira, let me get to this because we got to head out of here. Right. Yeah. John Gruden, last week you didn't like that Gruden said publicly, I never wanted to leave the Raiders. You thought he was telling a phony over there. What's the story there?
Well, because those of us that were
AKA lying
covering this team way back, and I don't mean in 1893, but I mean in January and February of 2003, remember very well that when the smoke cleared from that crazy weekend and Mariucci, that deal didn't go through with the Glazers, and then they weren't coming back from the West Coast without a coach.
Wow.
That wasn't going to happen. So then they made the classic. This is the second or third run they had made at Gruden. The second or third.
Because the Glazers, really.
Because McKay was interested in bringing in Gruden. But he thought the price was exorbitant when he started dealing with Al Davis. Well, anyway, during that weekend, during the negotiations, they were talking to Al Davis. The Glazers were talking to Al Davis. That's what you do. Because you got to have permission to talk to Gruden. Mm-hmm. You have to have permission. And Davis, when he realized how much the Glazers were willing to pay in terms of draft picks and money, then all of a sudden that piqued Al Davis's interest. Because, frankly, he thought Gruden was getting too much credit in Oakland. That bothered Davis. Mm-hmm. It bothered him. That was a real weak spot for Davis. He didn't realize Gruden was a heck of a coach, mm-hmm. and he was doing a heck of a job mm-hmm. with the Raiders. I mean, his last game was the Tuck game. They probably should have won that game.
They should have, yes.
Yeah. So when the Glazers are finished talking to Al Davis said, do you want me to ask John if he wants to talk to you guys? And Joel said, yeah. Next thing you knew, Al Davis was calling Gruden. Gruden was out at the movies or something.
Basketball game, wasn't it?
Yeah, reached him.
Golden State.
He says, you want to talk to Malcolm Glazer? Gruden said, yes, I do. Yes, I do.
So then
he sits at a podium and says he never wanted to leave the Raiders.
Yeah, so he's full of baloney. And Ira setting the record straight because you are the sage, the historian of Tampa Bay sports. Now, Ira, we got two games left. Jacksonville heads up to New England for the AFC Championship. You got a prediction here, Sage? We pick them all the time.
All right, quickly. I don't think if New England had their druthers, they would like to play Jacksonville because in certain ways they match up well. Great corners and a strong pass rush to get Brady off his spot. That's the only way you can beat Brady. But ultimately, you got Brady against Blake Bortles. The game's in Foxborough. The weather could be a factor. I cannot go against the Patriots. They don't lose games like this. So we're going to go one game at a time. I'm going with New England. I don't think it's going to be 38-7. Ultimately, Brady's going to get the job done. He's going to find a way, Lee.
I think it's going to be Brady versus Case Keenum.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. We don't pick the NFC yet. First AFC.
I jumped ahead. How many games?
Yeah, you jumped. So you're going with the new. You're going with the.
Yeah, Patriots. I can't go against Belichick. Like you said, home factor.
Can Jacksonville hang with him for a while? A little bit.
Well, I think they'll keep it close because of the defense, but it's going to be paid. I mean, Bortles is going to throw two picks at least, I believe.
Something tells me that Izbitz is he's laying in the weeds here.
I mean, I want
he might go with the Jags.
I want Jacksonville to win so bad, but I can't.
We know Steve's been on the Jags bandwagon. Yeah. I'm very interested in what he's going
to
say.
Since April, when he gave me $100 when I went to Vegas to get him rich.
Can they pull off
at the Great Arena
another
Resort?
Monumental upset on the road?
Can they pull it off? Yeah, but I can't. I'd be lying if I said I thought they were going to win. So I have to go with the Patriots. I hate the Patriots.
Even after smacking the Steelers in the mouth on the road?
I mean, look, it's New England. It's the AFC Championship game. I still think, Jacksonville is going to be able to run the ball a little bit. Patriots had the worst run defense in the NFL this year, yards per carry. But I think the most interesting element of the game, Ira, is Tom Coughlin, who is in regular contact with Doug Marrone, running that team.
He's going to be very involved.
Tom Coughlin was the guy who knew how to beat the Patriots.
Yes, he did.
And set up those game plans.
Yes.
You know that that's going to be a factor
and
here.
And he's got the players to do it.
And I like that. And he's got the talent to do it.
But he doesn't have Eli Manning at quarterback.
The X factor, I think for anybody watching, the X factor is can they hit and hurt Brady? That's really the deal. And
Gronkowski's always a tough matchup.
It's going to be a great game, I think. But, yeah, I'd have to say New England's going to win. The other game, Lee already picked Minnesota. I think the Eagles will win that game. I think, I just think Minnesota, their defense is built on speed, and I think that the elements are going to affect them enough to hurt that game.
I'm going to go the other way. I think Foles is going to realize that this is not the Falcons' defense, which is a decent defense.
Yeah.
The Vikings' defense, I think, is exceptional, even though that second half. But that's Drew Brees. This is Nick
Foles.
You got to remember that. That's Drew Brees.
Exactly.
I think the Eagles are going to have a lot of trouble scoring points in this game. And you know what? We've been laughing at Case Keenum all year. The guy never has a bad game. He doesn't have a bad game. So I think he'll put up 20 points, and I think that's going to be enough.
Eagles' O-line's better than Minnesota's defensive line, Ira. So I think that's the difference
there.
So you got all right, so good. I got a different team. I got the Eagles. How about that? All right, Ira.
And Javier will keep track.
Now by the time this podcast posts, you will have already had breakfast with Tony Dungy, Derek Brooks. We expect a full report.
And absolutely right.
Frankly, Ira, if you can't get one of those guys on the podcast, it means they don't like you. So there's pressure for you.
There you go, baby.
All right, get out of here, Ira.